You're listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Auto D Show here on Dave Pratt's Star Worldwide Networks, broadcasting from high above Camelback Road in beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona. And it is really gorgeous right now. I'm your host, Otto Daniolo, and this evening, my guest, artist, painter, and teacher, Linda Polinzi, will be with us. So I'm excited about that. In fact, it has been so much fun chatting before we go on. And you know how I always get started talking before the show, and it's like, shut up, don't tell me anything else. I want everybody to hear it. So we're gonna have a lot of fun. But one thing I do want to mention is Linda has been teaching at Scottsdale's Artist School for over 15 years. And tonight it's going to be fun to find out a little bit more about her life in the art world. And we'll do that right after this first tune from the Fervor Records catalog called Afraid of Me by Courtney Cotter King here on the Auto D Show. Check it out.
Because I smell nice doesn't mean that I'm scary. Just because my legs are smooth doesn't mean yours are too hairy. Maybe the man is afraid of me. Maybe the man is like a little boy. Maybe the man is afraid of me.
And that was Afraid of Me by Courtney Cotter King here on the Auto D Show, which is brought to you tonight in part by my great friends at Fervor Records and also by TheRecordingArtist.com, where every Wednesday evening I record bands live online while you watch. You can even participate via live chat if you want. And to learn more, visit TheRecordingArtist.com and be sure to check out our companion show on Amazon Prime called The Recording Artist. It's kind of cool. And so is my guest this evening, as a matter of fact, teacher and artist, Linda Polinzi. Linda, how are you doing?
I am doing excellent. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm thrilled that you accepted my invitation and that you came down today. What part of town are you coming in from?
I live Tatum and Shea.
Okay, not very far away at all.
Not at all.
That's not too bad.
Nice drive. Got to see the Christmas lights on the way in.
I know, they're going up like crazy. Mm-hmm. In that part of town, they get kind of excited.
It's pretty.
Yeah, there's lots of houses. In fact, there's one street. I think it might be off of, it's not off of Tatum. It's a major block either way, where you come one street south, the whole street lights up and synchronizes to the same radio station.
Oh.
Do you know what that is? Is that off of 52nd?
Yeah, I don't know the exact street either, but it's in the town of Paradise Valley, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting
thing.
That's
really pretty, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. In fact, I mentioned at the top of the show, this is, we're on Dave Pratt's Star Worldwide Networks, right?
Right.
Well, Dave's son's decorate the heck out of their place.
And so
they're always in the newspaper, both for breaking records at how beautiful it is and for how many neighbors have called to get them shut down and they start over again and get shut down. So they're doing great with that whole thing. But it feels good to have the holidays coming around.
Absolutely.
I don't know if it's just more this year or what, but it's so warm. We've had the warmest November on record, and I'm looking forward to wearing it. I even brought a jacket, but I didn't wear it. It's like, get cold, you know. I want to start breaking some of that up. But how long have you been in the Valley?
I've actually been here for 40 years now.
Okay.
So, long time.
Where'd you
practically
come?
A native.
Practically.
Originally from Minnesota.
Okay.
So.
Where in Minnesota?
Minneapolis.
Okay.
So I came out here when I was like 13 or 14 for Easter vacation. I had an aunt and uncle that lived out here and, you know, smelled all the orange blossoms and it was just amazing. And so then it was middle of the black ice, no storm when I was in high school, going from school to work, slipped on the ice a few times, went into the snowbank and just had an aha moment, like, I'm not going to live here.
Why are people still here?
Right?
That's what I thought when I came out to the American Southwest. I'm like, and then you go back to the Midwest. I'm originally from Illinois. I'm very familiar with Minnesota. Spent a lot of time on Long Lake up by Detroit Lakes in the winter as well, ice fishing and all. You go back and, you know, with the thin blood you get out here in the desert and first breath of fresh air, you're like, oh, that feels good, that cold air. And by 2 days, you're like, I got to get out of here.
Right.
You know, this, I can't take this anymore. It's amazing that people still, I'm happy they do. I don't want everyone here, but I couldn't go back and live that way.
It's so much easier to live here, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just back in Minnesota for Thanksgiving and, you know,
how was it?
Had to go and start the car and warm it up. Well, when I first got there, it was like 14 degrees, so really cold. But then it was 50 when I left, so.
Wow. That's kind of cool.
They've had a warm fall as well.
Mm-hmm. I remember living in Ohio and had a band come to my studio from Minnesota, and hanging out of the front of their car was an extension cord out of the radiator. And I'm like, what's that?
Yeah, you have to plug your car in.
Yeah. I had no idea.
Before electric cars were a thing, we still plugged them in.
Yeah, just to make sure it didn't freeze the block, you know. Just crazy. Just crazy stuff to live back there like that.
But everybody is so proud that they can handle the
and they should be
frozen tundra. Yeah,
and they should, because it's an effort, and I'm happy they can. That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
but you've been out here since you were very young.
So right after high school, I came right here.
And did you come out, or your family come out?
Me and my sister.
Okay, and then I need to know the rest of these details. So
yeah.
Your parents were back in Minnesota,
right?
And you came out to live with your aunt and uncle that were here.
No,
or the whole family came out.
I came out, and my sister came with me.
Wow. How old was your sister?
She just passed away 4 years ago, but she was 3 years older than me.
Okay. And you were 18 saying, I'm out of school. I'm out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I want to go.
I went to Phoenix College, and then I went to Collins College, which is no longer around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It was fun.
So, I mean, you packed it up and said, Mom and Dad, I really want to live in Arizona.
Bye-bye.
I don't want to live here. You were out. I love that. I think that's not necessarily preached a lot. It was preached in my house. You know, my father was one of those people who would regularly remind you as you were growing up through your teen years, what are you going to do when you're 18? Where are you going to live? If you go to school, you can stay, but otherwise you can't. What are you going to do? So we kind of always had on our radar that we were going to move out and start our life.
Right.
And I don't think that's necessary. Maybe life's a little tougher these days with the way money is, but it seems like that's not promoted, that you need to get out and start your life. And people stay home a lot more.
Yeah, I think we coddle our youngsters maybe a little more now.
Did you leave because you just, I got to get out of here, I'm going crazy? Or was it really, I want to be in Arizona?
It was a combination of things.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So. Well, that's exciting. So were you already painting when you were in high school?
No, I was drawing. A lot of drawing, mostly. And then I went to school for graphic design and photography. And then it was... I had a little graphic design business, and my oldest son, who is going to be 40 coming up, he had an accident at the babysitter's and got his eyeball poked, and they had to remove the lens to his eye.
Aww.
He lost vision in one of his eyes. So I had to shut down my business and care for him, and then I started painting, and I never stopped.
Mm-hmm. And you do a lot of charity work or a lot of free work.
Yeah, I'm passionate about bringing art to you know, neglected, abused kids, and just anybody, really. Right. I mean, I think it's been such a great outlet for me that I want to, you know, share that joy.
I was reading on your website, too, that you won, you received an award for Volunteer of the Year or somewhere.
Oh, yeah, and I, well, so I've been with Free Arts for Arizona for 25 years now, or just over 25 years, so they gave me, like, a lifetime achievement award.
That's cool.
Because, that's a long time to be involved with an organization.
Yeah, well, that's awesome.
But, I've really seen a lot of healing, and yeah, it's been fantastic.
And you also work a lot teaching classes or teaching art and painting,
right? Children and adults both. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What do you, is there a preference there?
I like them both, you know. But I will say that teaching adult, you have to be a little bit more like a cheerleader because they're more afraid of messing
that's
up.
That's true. They're more inhibited. And
yeah.
We're
kids.
Have to be perfect or
they,
good.
Yeah, they're sponges and you can just give them so much. And
interesting.
They, yeah, you can pour a lot into them. So I've been doing the Youth Academy at Scottsdale Artist School. I guess this is my 18th year now.
Wow.
So that's a long time. And then adults for maybe, I don't know, 12
So
years.
A little more psychology goes into your adult work than in
yes.
your kid work.
Mm-hmm. And I think because... You know, because I've been doing free arts for so long, you know, I always thought that you had to be neglected or abused to have this feeling of, you know, unworthiness. But really, a lot of us feel that way, you know, and shame. And art is a great way to pull that out of people, you know, make them feel that they're how they think and their ideas are totally legit and they're justified and...
That's an interesting point. You just made me think something more probably about the, your younger students or kids. Do they find, I don't know if you've ever, anyone's ever expressed this, but it's just to me, do they ever feel like they're speaking in secret when they paint? Like they can say things to you that you can't hear?
Oh, absolutely.
Then they let you know they did?
Absolutely. It pours out of them, yeah.
They can speak freer because they feel like no one can hear them, so they're not going to be criticized.
Right.
And an adult's going to be the opposite. Yeah, you know, they think you're going to criticize their work.
Yeah, it's well, hard. And it depends on the setting, too. You know, that's why I also have been doing some retreats, you know, weekend retreats to, like, Sedona, Tubac, and where I just take, you know, like, 6 to 8, usually women. And in that smaller, intimate setting, I think that they're able to really, you know, let themselves out more, you know, really express their intimate ideas and that. And that's what helps heal and, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you, I think you do this with this show you're doing, is you give people voice.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, you're helping people express themselves too.
Well, thank you. I think that's true. And what I find too, for me, that's fascinating is like, In asking you a question, your answer made me go, oh my gosh, I bet this happens. I just saw something I never would have thought of if we weren't talking about teaching children painting and their freedom of expression. So to me, it's also, I'm fascinated by people and I learn
yes.
from everybody merely by giving them an opportunity to speak, which is a lesson about listening maybe. You know, you'll learn something if you listen. So that's kind of cool. I also wanted to ask you, too, you've got online, you have a presence on Facebook, and you do you have an Instagram account, too?
Are
you
yes.
into all that? Okay.
Just and at people, Linda Palinsi. Yeah.
Okay, there you go. And that's P-U-L-L-I-N-S-I.
Correct.
Okay. And you also have a couple websites. One is your name,
right.
if I recall, .com. You also have a Leisurely Learning with Linda.
Right. So with
What's
the pandemic,
the difference? Okay.
I started doing some online courses, you know, because everything got canceled.
Yeah.
And so that's been really fun because that way I have these, so it's leisurelylearningwithlinda.com, or you can also get to it at learning.lindapalinsi.com. And so I've got about 7 different on-demand courses. So it's kind of cool because you can just go on and you can pause it and repeat and go back to it as many times as you want.
That's
and
pretty
so,
cool.
Yeah, I've kind of expanded my reach with that. So
and is that fun. Something that's primarily for beginner painters or is that something?
Yeah. Beginner to intermediate.
Okay. That'd be fun to do.
It's super fun.
Bit
you
of a learning curve.
And there's a free one on there to you can get your feet wet and see how you like it.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I had mentioned in a Facebook post talking about this interview that there are so many, it seems to me, of my friends and artists in the music world that also express themselves either as painters or photographers. That there's a whole visual component to music, but because they have that expression, they go there. Have you taught many artists, or excuse me, many musical artists in painting? Have you ever seen that transition in your work?
I agree that there's a lot of crossover like that, but I don't know that I've really taught many musical artists.
Well, how about the rest of your family? Were you the only one? Was your sister
pretty
artist,
much
artistic?
No, but I will say I just got to spend some time with my little brother going back for Thanksgiving, and he's a football coach.
Okay.
And he volunteers a lot, and we got to really hang out a lot. And I really see the similarities in what we do, because lifting other people up is like both of our missions. So it was like, wow, I never even realized that so much, you know?
Yeah, before. Especially coaching younger athletes.
Yes, and he does that a lot.
Because he gets to see all of that impact and the change in their work and their improvement.
Right.
It's
he just
feel cool.
Got to coach his grandson's team. So, you know, bringing it down the line. And he's taught his sons, and he's got two sons.
Yeah.
So, pretty cool.
That's very cool. And I've been told recently by a group of people we're working with that that's kind of what I do on the recording artist show as well, because we bring in these bands. They get 2 hours to record a song live online, but I'm producing. So I'm like, oh, no, do this, try this, do this. And so I'm helping them make it better on the spot.
Right.
And then giving them, we give them the recordings and we give them everything for free.
Oh, perfect.
They can go home and keep working on it if they want, or they can put it out. And then we cut some of that together for a television show too, which puts them on TV. So it's some of the groups are a little more established, but most of them have never really been produced by somebody. They make all their records themselves at home. So to have a professional's hand in just helping a little, showing them, oh, just do this and watch what happens. Do this and watch what happens. Then it's really neat. It's neat for me to see that, to see them respond.
Absolutely.
In fact, we had a group called the Twits in on the last television show, and the singer is 12, and the drummer is 10, and the bass player graduated from 8th grade that day that we were live. So I told him, you're too old to be in the band now. No graduates here. We need an 8th grader. But the funny thing was, they were so great. The drummer's so incredible. His name's Wrecker. He's actually on a Jimmy Fallon's kids show now. They picked him up, and he's on TV, on Peacock TV. We had him first, Jimmy. We can have him now.
You found him.
And then the singer, Camden Creel. Camden has done a lot of recording at home, and she's 10, or 12, excuse me. So she would say things to me like, well, I think if you put a crossfade over that, you know, to make it smoother. And I'm thinking,
oh my gosh, and she's 10.
What are you telling me to put a crossfade in my edit, you know, for? It was just hilarious to see how incredibly talented children can be, these kids can be, when they have these tools at a young age,
when
where they can dive
this.
In. You know, it's just been amazing.
Computers have done that to kids and, you know, in the art field too. Yeah. I'm seeing kids that we did this last summer, we did some stop motion animation, these kids were just incredible. Yeah. And with the computers and that, I mean, the technology's all there. And so they are going to grow so fast.
Yeah, I'm thinking the next batch of filmmakers.
Right?
You know, these kids are making movies when they're 10.
Yeah.
And editing apps.
Fearlessly.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's incredible what's going to be coming around the corner, I think.
Yeah, I think the future is really bright myself. But I'm an optimist, eternal optimist.
Well, that's good. Well, as an artist, you have that choice. A lot of artists live in a dark place, and they're the opposite. But what inspires you to paint? Other than knowing you have to create a lesson plan, or you're going in to teach. When you want to hit the canvas, what inspires you to go there?
Right now, nature. I've been really into plein air painting, which is going out and painting from life in nature. And so probably for the last 4 years, I've been hitting that real hard and loving it. We have an RV, so we can, even with the pandemic, we could just go out and my husband fishes and I go paint, and it's just...
Do you ever paint him fishing?
I have, yes.
Okay, I wondered.
Of course.
And certainly he didn't know the first time he did it, or he would have said, don't do that.
No, he wouldn't care.
Okay.
He's kind of a...
Cool.
A big ham anyway. But yeah, so I really enjoy that, and just capturing what I see out there, the light, the, you know, I love to be in nature. And so, and then now, real recently, I'm taking these plein air sketches and making them larger, and trying to get into some galleries here.
When you say plein air sketches, to explain what that means to me.
So that means sketches from life. So usually about 2 hours is all you can do because the light will change so much.
Right.
So it's like getting out there and nailing what you can in a couple hours.
Mm-hmm. And are you done, or you come back into the studio and polish?
Yeah, usually what I do, I'll polish them a little, but then I'll take the best parts of that sketch and turn it into a bigger piece.
Mm.
And so that's really
so
where
you
I'm
use
at
that
right
as
now.
Your inspiration for the things right. that you do that, and then you go, oh, this is what I really love. I'm going to make a big piece
yeah,
of this.
Yeah,
that's
so
pretty cool.
It's super exciting.
Well, you know, it's funny because I think that just answered the next question I was going to ask you, which I'll ask you anyway. But as a creator myself, but let's put it in songwriting form in a sense. If you do a lot of work in a particular period and you still feel inspired to do more, but you find it's turning out the same because you need a change of something.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes a change of venue, like going outside, or sometimes a change of tools, like putting down a guitar and grabbing a different instrument completely modifies how you start to express. Do you change tools?
So like more drums or something like that? Yeah, I change tools. I work in ink wash sometimes. I really was trained in watercolor, did watercolor for many years. Now I'm doing a lot more oil, but I skip around. And what teaching, I have to skip around because mm-hmm. people want to learn different media. But the oil is just, it's so luscious, and mm-hmm. you can really move it around. And I'll tell you, I just got, for my birthday, a table saw and an orbital sander, so I can start to build okay. these big panels to paint on. So
that's interesting.
I'm always, you know, just like you're doing with the different instruments, yeah. I'm always, yeah, modifying and growing, learning.
Yeah,
and
well, I find modifying the process or the tools, it just opens up creativity all over again.
Right, right. And you have to keep that artist in you stimulated mm-hmm. or, yeah. You lose it, right? So yeah. you have to try new things. And luckily, I teach at Scottsdale Artist School. So, you know, we have internationally acclaimed artists coming through there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I just took a course from Jill Carver, who's a really nice painter, brilliant painter out of Rico, Colorado. And coming up in January, I'm going to study with Douglas Fryer, who does... large abstracted landscapes, which is my thing right now.
I'd like to respond as though I'm very impressed, but unfortunately I'm unfamiliar with their names. But what I am impressed with is that you're studying under painters that you appreciate.
Yeah.
I think that's really, really cool.
Yeah, I'll never stop growing or, yeah. you know, learning or giving back or it's all good.
And is that how you first got started? Was it something you saw or somebody you saw working? Do you recall what got you drawing in the first place?
I just always drew, you know, even in grade school, you know, like I would design, you know, the cover for the program and, you know, I'm just...
Did you get in trouble at school for drawing too often
oh,
in class?
Oh, yes. Sure did. I went to a Catholic grade school too,
I got poked
a little bit, yeah.
You get in trouble for everything. That's funny. So. Yeah, I went to a Catholic Catholic school, then a public school, then a Catholic high school, then a public high school, and... it's funny the difference, you know. Mm-hmm. They made us wear ties. My junior year, our high school, hadn't been wearing ties for a number of years, like since maybe the 60s. And here we are in the, you know, late 70s. And the other Catholic school in town was wearing ties. And so they decided we should wear ties again, too. So they made us wear ties, and there was this great upheaval of the students. It was like a riot, you know, because they had nothing else to get upset about.
Right.
We will not wear our, they'll know our love by our, you know, our, they'll know we're Christians by our love, not by our ties. I think that was the big banner written up in the gym, you know. So what we would do, what the guys did to make the school mad is we would wear the same tie every day and leave it in our locker. We'd wipe our face
so they get smelly?
And just, yeah, we'd always wear the same ugly tie, you know, by the time. So they said, okay, you don't have to wear them except when the weather's cold. So it was a compromise. He did not have to wear them in the spring and fall. It was just kind of crazy.
How interesting.
What an odd memory for us to
human
bring
nature
back
is crazy.
Yeah, and also authoritative combat over the subject. You know, we.
Right.
I can see the teachers, well, that was a stupid idea, but we can't give up or we lose. So we have to, let's try and give them something so they'll give us something, you know. It was kind of funny.
Silly. And, us humans are silly.
And I think that's a big part of what artists see.
Yeah.
You know, they really see the absurdity sometimes in reality, and they see things from a separate perspective. And I know in songwriting, that's always the powerful one, is the such a common theme, but from a unique perspective. And do you
right.
see that in painting? Where you can yeah. do something everyone does, like a nature shot, but it's this particular aspect of that particular bird and that particular tree.
Right. You want to go your own way. And,
yeah.
and I think a lot of... people, when they first get into art, well, I did that paint and sip parties for a little while.
Okay.
But then I decided, you know, I wasn't really helping anyone make great art. It was just, copying. But, you know, a lot of people think, you know, that is art, just copying something. But it's really not. You know, it's like you say, it's got to come from within. It's got to mm-hmm. be... something you really want to say. And it couldn't just be capturing something, but in your own unique way. You never want to just copy another artist. That's no fun.
I use an analogy when I'm talking to parents and people about artistic-minded children. You can now validate or invalidate my use of this analogy as a painter. But I try to explain why artists don't ever finish anything and why they have such a hard time deciding sometimes where to go. And I describe it as a painter with a canvas. And I say, do you realize when they make the first brush mark on the canvas, 99% of the potential is gone? They've committed to a path and they've lost options. And artists won't do that until the last second. So when you paint, are you ever there at the canvas and the first mark is the hardest mark, or is that nothing to you now?
That's nothing to me now.
Okay.
But I do, there was a time, I still remember when I couldn't finish things.
Mm-hmm.
I could start all these projects, and I could never finish anything.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think it was probably when I started getting more commissions, where I knew there was going to be a check if I
right.
finish.
If I get
and
done.
So then I started finishing
that
things.
That was actually, I just typed the word when we were talking commissions. I wondered if you'd been commissioned to do any work for
particular lots,
people. Tell me
lots.
A little bit about that. Is that mostly for private collections or?
Yeah, I used to do portraits, but I don't do that anymore. For certain special friends, I will. But mostly okay. now, I do, I'll do landscapes, abstracts, or I still do pet portraits because I love animals. And so usually this time of year, I've got a few I'm working on right now because, you know, hey, we love our pets. And
mm-hmm.
they're so fun to paint. And so that's really fun, though. I do enjoy commissions.
Okay.
It's nice.
And I read that your work is held in some corporate collections throughout the U.S. and I guess private collections throughout the world. So how many pieces would you say you've got out there?
That's a good question. I never even considered that. I mean, in the whole course of my life, thousands, I guess.
Thousands.
Yeah.
That's
because,
pretty incredible.
You know, I was doing out of college, doing watercolors. And so... you know, did that for a while, and I was doing the people portraits, and so I've had a lot of evolving, and then for a while after the watercolor portraits, then I went into large abstract acrylic paintings.
Okay.
A lot of koi fish, really colorful. I studied with, what is his name now? It'll come to me, but a local artist, he's no longer here, that taught me how you could take raw canvas, wet it down in the shower, and then lay it out and apply acrylic to it, and it would blend just like a wet into wet watercolor. So I was doing these really large, colorful koi fish, and then I would stretch the canvas after I painted it, and that went really well for a while. And then I got sick of that. And
you can get, you can get tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
I have a buddy who does a few things. He's an incredible fine artist, but he probably has, over a number of years, made most of his money from being a speed painter. on stage.
Oh, at parties and events and stuff. Yeah.
And then he'll...
Where they spin the...
You know, on a 5-foot canvas. In 3 minutes, he'll paint somebody. You don't know what it is till it's done, kind of a thing. And people are very entertained by that. And what he's always done is he gets a fee for the event and then sells the paintings and takes all that money and donates it to whatever charity the event is going on for.
Oh, that's really nice.
So he's raised just tons and tons of money for charities and been paid for his trouble to do the event. But he also, he recently actually, Randall Hedden, was commissioned to do the new Chompies at 32nd Street. And
because they do so much artwork in
the new one. He just did everything in there. He just, you know, and he has these rock and roll paintings he does that are really, really cool. But there's such a span of his work. He designed some bars when people have asked him to design, you know, bars, just the retail bars. And it's fascinating as an artist where your work can take you.
Right. You never know.
Yeah. And then have you ever done anything like that, like commissioned to paint for restaurants or paint for commercial spaces?
Not so much that, but I have I've hung in restaurants and I've illustrated.
Yourself or just some
I've
of
illustrated
your work?
A couple books. Okay. And, you know, did a cover here, a cover there, you know, that kind of thing. So
cool.
Yeah.
Well, I have some young artists in my life who are incredible. And I would love to say, oh, here's all you got to do. Go over here and they'll help you. They'll take you to the next level. But I don't really have that information in your industry. Where can I direct people, young people who are extremely talented, or what can I tell them to do that helps them move forward in their career? From a commercial
standpoint, carry a sketchbook is the number one thing I always say. And just start sketching anytime you have free time, you know, instead of being on the phone. Sketch. Mm-hmm. But Scottsdale Artist School has a wonderful youth academy, and that's a good place. But most schools, you know, can direct you to what art is available in that neighborhood. And there's a lot of...
So if you have stuff, you're 30 years old, you're 25 years old, you never sold a painting, or you sold a couple, but you've got enough work, you're ready, you think you want to be in a gallery, you want to do a show. How do you physically initially just approach galleries out of the blue to try to get that kind of opportunity, or what's the way?
Yeah, I mean, that's always a hard way because...
I hate going through the front door, and I hate recommending going through the front
door.
Right. You know?
Well, if you know that gallery is aligned with what you're creating... then go through the front door and ask, you know, say, hey, I've checked this place out, I think I fit, you know, can I show you some stuff? But I right now I'm in a point where I just pulled from my gallery that I was in for over 20 years because I've changed a lot, like I just told you. I'm not painting the way I was when I was first in there, and so I'm about, you know, to try and find a couple places to sell my work. And of course it's hard because, you know, you never want to be the one that's the worst one in the gallery. And so I've been waiting and waiting and waiting. I mean, I've written letters and not sent them because I don't think I'm ready and stuff.
That's interesting.
I really think I'm ready now. I've been selling pretty consistently. And so, but I'm thinking, you know, smaller town galleries.
Interesting. Interesting.
I'm going to hit a couple here, but we'll
see. Sounds to me like the old days of, you know, remember Back to the Future, and this so resonated with me when I was a kid. The lead actor was in a band, and his girlfriend asked him, "Oh, have you ever sent your tape into a record company?" And he said, "No, I don't think I could handle the rejection." And that was the end of the conversation. And I felt like everyone in the theater stood up and turned around and looked at me.
There's so much rejection out there. And it's so hard for young artists because you know what? They say, you know, you got to win some contests, and every contest, there's an entry fee, right? And there's no guarantee of anything, you know.
And everybody but one is going to be the loser.
Right. It's not good that what we do to artists. And then, you know, and everyone likes the performance. So your buddy, the speed painter, you know, people want to be entertained more than respect. A fine artist. But.
Yeah, you know, and art is, I guess it's kind of like music too, from a consumer point of view. It's so different for everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, because I am not an art aficionado, but I can walk in front of something and just say, okay, wait a minute, I have to look at this.
Right.
This does something to me.
There's ones that grab you and hold you, and
you look and 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 look, and it's certain pieces just tend to keep bringing you in. And my first thought is, okay, why? Why are you doing this to me when the last, you know, the last pieces I walked by didn't do that to me? I start to look at what's the difference.
Right.
I try to be analytical about it. When 9 times out of 10, it's not all that. It really is so much more.
It's not
how
the
it
front
feels.
Of your brain, no. right? It's more your instinct, more your gut, and how you react.
And to me, the power of that's fascinating.
Yeah.
So when you paint abstract work, I think that's probably where, to me, that's where that's so relevant. I can see one abstract piece which does nothing, and one abstract piece which is like takes your breath away.
Well, and I think all painting in some way is abstract. You know, it's like there's light, there's dark. You know, we design a path for the viewer to go in our paintings, and
intentionally
orchestrate. Oh, yeah,
so you have this is where they're going to look, and when they do, after a minute, they're going to notice this space. And I'm going to take them here. Do you you think that way?
And you play with the color and harmonize it, and
that's interesting. There's
a lot of thought goes into it.
That's fascinating.
Good. It's fun.
Do you have a favorite, in abstract painting, do you have a favorite color palette, or is it just anything goes, whatever you're in the mood for?
Well, I'm recently expanded my palette a little bit by studying with Jill Carper. You know, I think as artists, we all get stuck in certain combos and certain colors, and there were some really intense, strong colors that I was kind of keeping off my palette, and, they can be neutralized. They can be toned down. So I'm, trying to always grow and experiment and try different things. And so...
Taking that on, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And every artist that I study with, I only choose artists that I really respect their work. And so, I'm a lot more refined in what I take in now than in the past. I just... tried everything, and I'm a lot more picky, I guess, in how I apply the paint, and I'm trying to get more of a series, a look, and that's part of marketing and art too. It's like you can't be all over the place. You have to kind of stay in one genre.
Yeah, if you're going to be all over the place, you need separate names for each of the pieces.
Right? That's the way it is.
Because people don't want you to be that. They want to understand you. It has to be identifiable.
Yeah.
Very similar with music. You can't... In the old days, a band could play anything. But these days, after the first song, you got to be just like that or we won't know who you are.
We
want that thing you did. We want another one of those.
Yes.
And while some musicians... And some musicians consider... kind of repeating like that, kind of, and making another one just like the last one, kind of a sellout. Pete Townsend from The Who once said that they had a hit song, and the label and the fans and the managers were all like, "Hey, can you give us another one like this?" And he said, "I have a commission." He goes, "I wrote 10 more of those and they were all hits. I didn't feel like I was selling out. I felt like I had a commission. I'm an artist."
Yeah, that's a great way to look
and
at
I
it.
I never heard a music person take that, but he felt like the moment they said, "Can you give me another one like that?" He felt like he'd hit the mark,
Right.
So I thought that was interesting. And I wanted to ask you, when you're working, maybe you've had this experience, or maybe you can tell me if you've seen this in students, but we talked about changing colors or leaving colors off your palette, expanding that. Do you think people come to a place where they finally do something, they go, "Oh, this is really nice. I feel like I've really done something." Do you think they tend to stay there, maybe explore that more, and then they find that they can accidentally define their comfort zone?
Oh,
and that's where they just stay? Because as long as I do this, it's going to rock.
Absolutely.
But if I go here, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's human nature. I mean, if if you get rewarded for behavior, you're going to repeat that behavior, Yeah. So it's a trap, though. Can be a trap.
Can be. That's why I think I said, do they do that to themselves? They put themselves there. You can recognize it and feel it, and you can also move on. But you can say, "Hey, I found my thing. This is what people like this. I'm just going to do a bunch of this."
Right. I've seen that on many artists. They do their one style and they always keep it forever. And that's an option,
Yeah, and it can work for you.
It's not me, but that's okay. Yeah. I'm going to be me no matter what. Mm-hmm.
Well, let me ask you something else then about you. Music. My life has been spent professionally, mostly in music. So, let me ask you: Do you use music either while you're working, or do you use it initially to inspire you to work, or is there any application for music in your art?
Absolutely. I listen to music pretty much all the time. I have Pandora. I subscribed to Pandora when it first came out, so I pay like $4 a month with no commercials, so I can have music 24/7. But lately, I also listen to podcasts. So when I was checking you out, I listened to a few of your episodes, and books on tape through Audible too, because
that's great.
I'm ADHD, or you know, most artists are, and so if I have something playing like a book or a podcast, keeps my monkey mind busy, and then I can really get into that painting.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. I think it would constantly change me. Like, I'd be doing one thing and the song would change, or the topic would change, and the work will change.
Yeah, the brush moves faster to a faster beat.
Yeah, because my problem is when I get into a crowded room like a restaurant and I'm trying to have a conversation with someone, we go and sit down, and all of a sudden they'll say something to me and I have this blank look on my face. It's like, I heard you, but you're in a queue between the 10 things I just heard around me that I'm trying to ignore.
Yeah.
I'm trying to not respond to. I'm thinking, oh, that was a stupid thing for them to say, because I hear the whole conversation because I'm an audio person and I can't turn it off. But I'm talking to you. And it's crazy how people have said my personality changes when you go into a place like that. And it's like, I'm just, all of a sudden I have too much to pay attention to.
I'm noise sensitive too. Very much so. I mean, if it's too loud and like commercials, I can't handle any commercials.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I just don't do them.
Yeah. I remember the first time I was writing a song after I hadn't for a long time, I literally had to lock the door to the building, lock the door to the room, turn off the lights and sit in the corner, and just, I couldn't hear anything. If I heard anything, it would become a priority. It would distract me.
Wow.
And I had to learn to let go of all of that and allow myself to just let this happen. And man, was that hard. It had been like 15-year void, but that was a lot of work.
Interesting, yeah.
It was fascinating. Well, listen, we've been chatting for a while, about 40 minutes already. Gosh, time flies.
It went by fast.
Yeah, so let me, you brought me a big blue folder full of stuff, and we're going to open up that folder, but before we do, I thought maybe we just play one more song, we can get a drink of water and give you a break here.
Great.
So here's another cut from the Fervor Records catalog, and this is a band called Broken Bellows with a tune called In the Deep here on the Otto D Show. Check it out.
listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
That was In the Deep from the Broken Bellows here on the Auto D Show, where my guest this evening is Linda Polenzi. And Linda, we've been talking about art. We've been talking about all the things you've been doing. We're going to talk about the things you've got coming up. But before we do, I mentioned before the last song, this blue folder you brought in.
Yes.
And to me, I'm an artist. I'm surrounded by artists, and I'm just fascinated by artists and the artist mind. And so when you brought this in and you showed it to me and you said, here, I made some notes of all these different things and then blah, 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 and typed up pages. And I'm like, nobody works this hard to come talk with me. This is like, wow, look at all this stuff. And so I thought, don't even show it to me. I'm just going to go through it, hand it to you and go, what's this? So there are things listing all of these different years in the past 23 years since you began with Free Arts. There's a lot of things listed. I think we talked a little bit about Free Arts, so I'm going to skip over that for a second. And then you brought me these ones written in pencil here. This one's fascinating. This is a pencil list dating back to 2010 of notes and kind of on a calendar. Tell me a little bit about why you do this.
Kind of crazy, right?
It's a calendar / diary of events in the past.
I should type it up, but I journal handwritten, and I like to write things by hand, I guess, because I'm an artist. But yeah, so I made this ongoing chart of like art commissions, classes I've taken, places I've traveled, jobs I've done, because every year is different for me. I'm always changing and doing new things, and so it's too much for me to remember, so I have to keep this running tally of it.
Because it's good to look back.
Yeah, yeah.
I think sometimes a measure of where you are is a reflection of where you've been.
Right, right.
And that review sometimes helps you see where you may want to go or even go back to.
So, and I guess it's the teacher in me. I always over-prepare.
Okay, now I could read some of these to you and have you explain them to me, but I would rather have you pick a couple of those and tell me why they're on that page.
Okay, so this is, I was in a four-woman show this past February called Be the Light, inspired by Amanda Gorman's poem. And so it was a great show down at First Studio, which is where the recording studio where they did Waltz and Ladmo.
Mm-hmm.
Familiar?
Yep.
And so, yeah. So it's just give you a quote here. If one has the courage, nothing can dim the light that shines from within. Maya Angelou. So kind of the way I live and teach and create is through those beliefs, I guess.
That's very, very cool.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned during the break, too, that you've actually done some work for some wine. You've done some wine labels for a vineyard in Arizona.
Four Tails Vineyard, which is a vineyard down in Pierce, Arizona, just south of Wilcox.
Mm-hmm.
I do all their wine labels.
How did that relationship come about?
They're dogs. They have four rescue dogs. And I love to draw dogs. So mm-hmm. They discovered me, and I just started creating all their labels.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Now, that's an interesting thing. It kind of applies to the question before about how to get out there, how to get going. As long as you're putting your work out,
right,
it'll resonate with those that it resonates with, and there are the opportunities.
Absolutely.
So these guys found you. How long have you been doing that with them?
I think about 6 years now.
Awesome.
I would have to refer to my notes.
That's okay. You don't even have to. It's not that critical. But this is a paying gig.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That you landed this client, in a sense, of commissioned work.
Right, right.
Because of your love of painting dogs.
Absolutely. And, of course, I do enjoy wine as well, so I get to go down to the wine tastings. And
that's cool.
And it's always
and
great.
Speed paint a dog.
Because they'll be like, here's the artist that does the labels.
You know? That's got to feel pretty cool.
It's really fun. They're a great couple.
Do they give you a discount by the case?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Of course.
Fantastic. So what we need to do is you painting one of those labels at home, and film that online like a Facebook Live thing and then edit it, speed the edit down a bit, you know. And
yeah, now you have to have it, just 30 seconds.
I know.
Before we used to do 3 to 5 minutes. Now it's 30 seconds.
I know.
It's changed.
Yeah. I just had an agent ask me for a sizzle reel of a concert show we put on. 45 seconds or so. And I'm like, 45 seconds?
What is that? Yeah.
Do you want a verse? Or do you want me to give 7 pieces of songs in 45 seconds?
Right.
But yeah, no one has the time or attention span these days, it seems. Yeah. But that's, you know, and that's just, that's tough. It's too bad. Do you find that that's with art consumers or aficionados? In music, they used to buy the album even if they just wanted the single, kindly because they had to a lot of times. But yet they then enjoyed the album and got to know the artist deeper because of the work. Where today, it seems only the single and so superficial and turned over so fast.
Right.
Do you find that people, when they find a piece of art, they either want one more, or do they tend to come into the artist then and experience the other work?
Yeah, it really depends on the customer. I mean, people that buy fine art aren't the folks that are buying, you know, prints and posters usually, mm-hmm. you know, but most of us offer some kind of prints so that we can appeal to a wider mm-hmm. audience. But yeah, it's interesting that not the average Joe buys, I think, the fine art, mm-hmm. but there's certainly enough people with extra money to mm-hmm. that appreciate it and
right.
understand the value of having you know, original art.
And if somebody finds that one piece that's perfect in their living room, do they then say to you, "Now we need something like this for our dining room"? I mean, do they want to expand your work into their place when they find one?
Yeah, that happens occasionally, but it's not the norm.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's the norm. But yeah, once they're your fan, though, I think they're your fan forever. And mm-hmm. they have, you know, a house up in Prescott or house, you know.
So you get invited up.
In Oregon.
Let's show you where we hung your painting.
Yes, yes. So that is good.
Do you ever get invited to those kinds of things? Then you can kind of go, kind of frown a little and like, yeah. Oh, what's wrong? What's wrong?
Well, it's mostly, you know, people that are already my friends,
right.
you know, so yeah. Because of course, if people like me, then they're going to want my art, right?
Yeah.
So it kind of goes hand in hand, I think.
Yeah, I think that's very, very true. Because then there's so much more than just the painting there. They
right,
see
there's
you.
A story.
Yeah, and
you
they
know,
see you
behind.
And they feel you every time they look at it.
Yeah, and it's such an honor for me, you know, that somebody, you know, feels that they want to spend every day with a painting. I just ran into some old friends that the gentleman that I first worked for when I moved to Arizona owned Steve's Grill downtown. And I painted a picture of their son when he had a son. So he's holding the infant baby. And they said, you know, we see that painting every day, and it brings us such joy. And boy, that's music to my ears.
Isn't
you know?
That amazing?
It's really cool.
How old is he now? How many years ago was that?
The child, I think, is like 10 or 12.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's been a while.
That's pretty cool. Well, listen, before I let you go, because we're coming up on the end of the show,
okay.
You've got some events coming up, and I wanted to talk about those.
Okay, yeah. I wanted to mention that coming up, I've got a Zoom class that I'm doing for Scottsdale Artist School, and it's going to be two Thursdays in January, the 6th and the 13th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's called Abstracting the Landscape.
So do you have to go to Scottsdale
no,
Artist
No, you just
Studio,
do it on your computer.
I mean online, Scottsdale Artist Studio's website? Or
To sign up, yeah.
Okay.
So it's scottsdaleartschool.org.
Okay.
To sign up. And then I've got lots of on-demand courses, which we mentioned mm-hmm. briefly. And then I've got two live classes coming up at Scottsdale Artist School. One in February, February 3rd. It's a one-day workshop, 9 to 4, Abstracting the Landscape. And that's acrylic or oil. And then one April 7th called Botanical Abstraction. And that's with watercolor.
Very cool.
So that's going to be...
So if anybody, that's for beginners on up,
yeah.
anybody who wants to get involved?
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
And they have a supply list that you'll see when you register.
Okay, so you know what you have to have.
Right, right, what to bring in. Yeah.
So. That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's
pretty
very,
fun.
Very cool. I had one other thought. Let's see if I can remember what it was. We talked about the upcoming events. Gosh, don't you
I
hate
think
it when that
I
happens?
I mentioned to you during the break about I'm doing currently doing a program for Free Arts. That's a professional artist series where I'm going to a group home and working with some teen girls, and I'm helping them paint their happy place.
That's
so we
cool.
talk a lot about, you know, how you can go to your happy place whenever you're stressed or uncomfortable, mm-hmm. and so we're getting that down on canvas, and so that's pretty cool.
That's very cool. That's very, very cool. I like that. And there we are, end of the show music, so we're going to have to let you go. Linda, thanks for coming in, spending this time with me. I really appreciate it.
It's been a thrill. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and so everybody should check you out. And the simplest way is your website.
Absolutely.
Which is just lindapalinzi.com.
Correct.
Great. And find her on Facebook, too, and you'll find all kinds of stuff. So thanks again.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon. And thank you all for listening to The Auto D Show here. We'll see you next week. Take care.